recording. So we're in Esther chapter 3. All right, Esther chapter 3. We are meeting our last kind of main character, and the plot is really going to get going here, okay? And we'll see all the seeds that have kind of been sown in the first two chapters are going to start to come to life a little bit. So let's go ahead and get into the depths here. Abigail, can you just read the first verse?
Sure. After these things, King A promoted Haman, the Agagite.
I'm going to go with Agagite.
Oh, cool. Never would have guessed that one.
No, it's okay. There, you'll run into that a lot, unfortunately.
The son of Hammedatha.
And I like it.
And set his throne above all the officials who were with him.
Okay. Alexa, do you remember what happened at the end of last week in Esther?
Okay, so this could have been the one before that, but didn't Esther, like, wasn't she made queen? And then Mordecai overheard the guards saying, hey, let's go kill the king. And Mordecai was like, hey, Esther, don't kill the king. And Esther went to the king and said, king, they want to kill you.
Oh, yeah, that was you who did all that. Yeah, no, that was so good. Yay, that was so good. So Mordecai rescues the king, but it looks like someone else gets the promotion. Now, we don't know if this is the exact same event, but Mordecai rescues the king, and Haman, the Agagite, gets a promotion. Haman is our bad guy. All right, if you're taking notes, you may want to stretch this out because this one's a little bit of a doozy. Ty, what's one of the important things about Hebrew storytelling and an introduction of a character?
So with what they're described as, basically describes their character.
Yes. Remember, Abigail, do you remember how Esther is described? What's her opening trait?
Beautiful.
Yeah, and that's going to help define a lot of her character. Mordecai, does anyone remember how Mordecai is introduced?
As a Jew.
As a Jew. And Haman is introduced as what?
Agagite.
As an Agagite. All right, this is why this is important. Haman is a descendant. Well, let's back up. Mordecai is a descendant of who? You guys remember this? Sydney, go ahead.
I don't remember for sure. Was it Benjamin?
No, you're in there though. So Mordecai has a guy named Kish in his family. Kish is the father of King Saul. Okay? Kish is the father of King Saul. Haman is an Agagite. Haman is directly related in some form or fashion to King Agag. Okay? This is 1 Samuel chapter 15, is King Agag. And we're going to keep going back because it gets deeper and deeper. King Agag was king. I mean, you got to be king of something, right? King Agag was king of the Amalekites. A-M-A-L-A-K. Or E-K. Sorry, E-K. Still, either one. King Agag, king of the Amalekites. The Amalekites in 1 Samuel 15... Back this up. The Amalekites fight against Israel and they lose, and King Saul is supposed to kill everyone of the Amalekites, and he doesn't. He leaves King Agag alive. Okay. Samuel, the prophet, 1 Samuel, guy who wrote it, gets on to Saul and rebukes him for this and hacks Agag to pieces in front of King Saul. If you think the Bible's boring, it's because you've never read it, right? Anna, hello. Anna, we're in Esther chapter 3, verse 1. And we just established that Haman is an Agagite, okay? He's the descendant of King Agag, who was king of the Amalekites, okay? Now, so Samuel kills King Agag, like hacks him to pieces. It's very Game of Thrones-esque, right? Very intense. Here's why that's important, okay? The Amalekites are the first group of people to attack Israel when they're set free during the Exodus, okay? In Exodus chapter 17, Amalek, the Amalekites, they try to attack and kill Israel. This is God's chosen people. Does not go well for them. Maybe you remember the story in Sunday school of the army of Israel is fighting, and as long as Moses holds his staff high, they're winning. But when the staff comes down, they lose. And so Aaron and Hur, I think, hold Aaron's staff up, or hold Moses' staff up. You guys remember this story? They're fighting the Amalekites in Exodus 17. That's the army, all right? So we've got it so far, the Amalekites. So the Amalekites have always been enemies of Israel, have been enemies of God's chosen people. We're going to go back one more step. Amalek, who the Amalekites come from, Amalek is one of the sons of Esau, okay? Amalek is one of the sons of Esau, as in Jacob and Esau. Let me text this link out. All right, are we all on the same page? And I promise you, I will loop all this together for everyone, okay? Text me if this doesn't work. If this doesn't work. Okay, here's why this is important. You got Jacob, oh, bingo. You've got Jacob and Esau, okay? So here's why this is huge. In Genesis chapter 3, which is Adam and Eve, I'm going to go back through all this, don't worry. Genesis chapter 3, you've got Adam and Eve, right? And God tells Satan that the seed of the woman and the seed of the serpent will fight each other until the very end. In other words, the seed of the woman is not just Jesus, but it is God's chosen people, okay? All the way through. Remember in Revelation, right? The woman births the child. The woman is the church. And the seed of the serpent is all these evil people who try to destroy God's people, okay? Think about even in Egypt, Pharaoh's crown has a little serpent on it, right? This Haman versus Mordecai is not just two grumpy old men, right? That's not what this is. Later on in Esther chapter 9, verse 24, Haman will be called the enemy of the Jews. He's kind of a representative of this age-old conflict between the people of God and the seed of Satan, okay? Now, Haman's not going home and, like, worshiping Satan in his closet, but Haman is a tool of the devil, just like all oppressive government systems, just like all oppressive people towards Christianity, unless they're converted, they are disciples of the devil. So let's go the reverse order. In Genesis 3, God says that Satan's seed will do war with his seed. Okay. Do not disturb. There we go. We'll do war with his seed. Let me send this out to Cam one more time. One of the first ways it shows itself is through Jacob and Esau, right? Jacob is the chosen one. Jacob's line comes Israel, right? Jacob's name is Israel. But Esau, his line is the seed of the serpent. Esau never repents of his sin. Here comes Amalek. The Amalekites attack Egypt, and God swears in Exodus 17 after the staff battle that he will wipe Amalek off the face of the earth, okay? Later on, you have King Agag, right? Agag is fighting against Israel, okay? Cam, yes! Spiritual warfare, baby, but we did it. Woo! Okay, good. I'm so glad. Can you hear me? All good? Can you hear me, Cam? You're all good to go? Okay, perfect. I will catch you up on what I have just explained later, okay? So Genesis 3, you have the seed of the woman and the seed of the serpent. Comes down to Jacob and Esau. Jacob's the chosen seed. Esau's the unrepentant seed. Esau has Amalek, okay? Exodus 17. That's kind of Esau's line attacking Jacob's line still, The seed of the serpent attacks the seed of the woman. Okay, God's chosen people. Go down to, and God pledges to wipe Amalek off the face of the earth. Here comes King Agag in 1 Samuel, the Amalekites attacking Israel again. And Samuel, now we see why Samuel hacks Agag to pieces, because he knows the Bible. He knows God has sworn to destroy Amalek. And Saul, you won't do that. You're protecting the spawn of Satan, literally, right? So he hacks Agag to pieces. Now flash forward to Esther, and we have Haman, the Agagite, okay? This is an ancient hatred, okay? So we've got all that, and he is above all the officials except for kings. So he is basically second in command of Persia. Okay, does that make sense? Questions on that? I know that was a lot of information. We're on the same page? So this isn't just two mean whatever. This is an ancient hatred, okay? All right, here we go. Let's go to verse 2. Anna, do you mind reading verse 2?
You said chapter 3, right?
Yes, chapter 3, okay. Verse 2. Sorry. Chapter 3, verse 2.
Chapter 3, verse 2. Okay. And all the king's servants who were at the king's gate bowed down and paid, I always say this word wrong.
Homage?
Thank you. Homage, yeah. To Haman, for the king had so commanded concerning him. But Mordecai did not bow down or pay homage.
Correct. All right. So we're seeing some themes here. First of all, Alexa, did you catch it in verse 2? Why do, now Haman, well, let's back up. What position is Haman in Persia, basically? He is what?
He's like second in command, just after the king.
He's second in command. There is nobody above Haman but the king. Abigail, according to verse 2, why does everybody bow to him or pay homage to him? Because why?
Because the king had commanded.
All right. Ty, why is that weird? Why is that ironic?
Because you would think that people would bow down anyway, or bow down to the king.
If you have to be commanded to bow down to this guy, Sydney, what does that say about the respect level people have for Haman?
Not genuine.
No, Haman is so disliked among the people of Persia, so unrespected, that the king not only has the promote of a second in command, but then command everybody to bow to him. This is the kind of guy we're dealing with here. Also, think about chapter 1. What else does this remind us of, where the king has to order that someone be respected? What you got, Sydney? Go for it. Or not? Are you meditating? You popped up like you knew.
It like flashed into my brain and then flashed right out. That's immediately. Okay.
Cam, can you help her out? What does this remind us of from chapter 1? Being commanded to show respect to someone.
I'm having all the difficulties.
Tonight. You're good. When you're good.
The king commanded that all the women must respect their wives or husbands.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's good. It's the same echo. Does that make sense? And there's no genuine respect there. You can't respect someone if you're commanded to respect them. By definition, that we will have family fun. I order that we have fun. Well, now we're not going to have fun. Does that make sense? It's the same thing here. Okay. Same thing here. But, and everyone bows at the king's command except for one person. And Ty, who is that one person?
Mordecai.
Mordecai does not bow down or pay homage. Okay. Which is weird, because Mordecai saves the king's life like 6 verses ago. But he won't bow to Haman. And we're not really explained why. Like, yes, there's this deep-seated hatred of Jews and Agagites and Amalekites. And we'll see, that's pretty much what's going on. But you can't just suck it up and bow down. It's just interesting. And one of the things that this shows is that people are just complicated, okay? Like, Mordecai did this great thing like 3 verses ago, and now he's about to blow it for the whole kingdom, okay? that sounds a lot like us, right? You know what I mean? Like, we do these really good things and we get all this credit. And then it's like, oh my gosh, I dropped my phone in the toilet again. You know what I mean? Like, Haman, I mean, excuse me, Mordecai's just, he's one of us. We can be good people, but we're tainted with sin. And so anyway, more to come on that. More to come on Mordecai. Ha ha. All right. Let's go. Alexa, can you read verse 3 and 4?
Then the royal officials at the king's gate asked Mordecai, "Why do you disobey the king's command?" Day after day, they spoke to him, but he refused to comply. Therefore, they told Haman about it to see whether Mordecai's behavior would be tolerated, for he had told them he was a Jew.
Yes. Okay. So the reason Mordecai won't bow to Haman is essentially because why?
Because they told him he was a Jew.
Yes. Now, what's weird about this, I'm going to get Haman and Mordecai flip-flop, so just keep them straight in your head. Mordecai won't bow because he's a Jew, because he's a servant of God. But Alexa, what did Mordecai tell Esther specifically not to do ever?
Don't tell them that she was a Jew.
Don't reveal your Jewishness. So what's going on here, right? So we have a couple of things going on here, okay? First of all, people can be, I don't know if you can share my stuff here in America, people can be very prideful about religious things. So much so that the religious thing no longer becomes religious. It just becomes hurtful. Does that make sense? It also, remember, one of the themes of Esther is wisdom. Esther continues to take advice from people and it always helps. Vashti slams into King A and it costs her everything. Mordecai shows no kind of tact or wisdom here. And it's going to cost him everything. So I think one of the things that's going on here is not that we're supposed to fold to, like, remember, Esther is not the example, okay, in what she did physically and that sort of thing. But one of the themes of Esther is how are believers supposed to navigate an unbelieving world? Does that make sense? One of the ways we should not navigate an unbelieving world is just to crash into people with stuff. Mordecai should have shown some tact here. Look at how wise and how helpful he was when the king's life was threatened. But now that Haman, who nobody likes, and he's an Agagite for crying out loud, he just won't bow. And as we'll see, this was a bad decision. It doesn't seem to be looked upon favorably. Like when Daniel and the lions then, Daniel won't bow to King Nebuchadnezzar. The text treats that favorably. Mordecai's action here isn't favorable. So are we just supposed to bow to the culture? Like if the culture tells us that abortion is okay, should we just bow to that? Well, that's not what it's saying. As believers, we need to have wisdom, okay? This isn't so much... I mean, it is a public policy that they have to bow, but it's also a personal thing between Mordecai and Haman. And Mordecai is letting this personal thing blow up the entire deal. So it's about wisdom. How do believers wisely navigate an unbelieving world? So let's see how things go. Anna, can you just read verse 5?
And when Haman saw that Mordecai did not bow down or pay homage to him, Haman was filled with fury.
Okay, not a great start, right? Remember, one of the big themes in Persia is shame and honor, okay? Do not shame me in front of other people. Remember how upset King A was when Vashti, when she shows him up in front of all these other people and he loses it. To be dishonored, and this is an example that Tim Keller gave that I thought was so good. We think that is so dumb. Like, who cares if you're shamed in front of people? But especially in the South, it's very much a shame and honor culture. But one pastor used the example, think about in America, how obsessed we can be sometimes with our bodies, with how we look. I've put on some weight and now I'm more ashamed of my body. Someone in ancient Israel might say, why are you so concerned with how you look? because in their culture, that wasn't the issue. Does that make sense? Every culture has their own things that they obsess over, right? And in Persia, it was shame and honor. To be shamed in front of other people was a huge sin. So let's see how he reacts to this, okay? Abigail, can you read just verse 6?
Sure. But he disdained to lay hands on Mordecai alone. So as they had made known to him, the people of Mordecai, Haman sought to destroy all the Jews, the people of Mordecai, throughout the whole kingdom of King A.
Good. Okay. So now we've seen this in chapter 1. One person is shamed by somebody who bucks up at them. And Alexa, King A's wrath doesn't just fall on Vashti. Who else is punished?
It was all the women, technically.
Exactly. It translates to all the people in that society who are the same. And now we see that echoing back here. Haman disdained to lay hands on Mordecai. Oh, I'm not going to just make Mordecai pay for this. Ty, who all is going to feel Haman's wrath for this? Not just Mordecai, but
all the Jews.
All Jews are going to suffer for this. So this was the importance of chapter 1, showing us how things work in Persia. It was laying the foundation for what's about to happen. Now, this isn't funny anymore. Now, these people's lives are in danger. And again, all the Jews. Haman and the Amalekites are the enemies of all the Jews. Satan is an enemy of all the people of God. Esther is putting this on a much grander scale here, okay? And again, think back to those of you who've been in Revelation with me, chapter 13, I think, the beast, right? The first beast, corrupt government against God's people. It's been going on all throughout history. Persia is a great example, right? All right. And again, Persia came across the Euphrates to destroy Babylon, right? That was Cyrus. That was King A's dad, okay? So it's all coming together. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. All right. Let me look at here. Mordecai not bowing has now put his people in danger. And also look at how sensitive and shallow Haman is. He's second in command of the most powerful country in the world. He has everything he could possibly want, and it's done nothing to deepen his soul. If you can't handle one person having an issue with you, you're not going to get very far as an adult, right? Haman is a grown man, and he is going to kill a race of people for one of them. There's no record of any other Jews disdaining Haman, but he just can't handle what Mordecai has done. And again, the Lord works to deepen us as people, not to get us more stuff. Stuff is fine. There's nothing wrong with stuff or jobs or spouses, etc. But the Lord's going to use those things to deepen us as people. So all the Jews, this is the seed of the serpent going after the seed of the woman in this ancient story. All right. Alexa, can you read verse 7?
In the 12th year of King Xerxes, in the first month of Nisan, the Pur, that is the lot, was cast in the presence of Haman to select a day and a month. And the lot fell on the 12th month, the month of Adar.
Okay. Anyone else remember where lots are from in the Bible? Not Lot, Abraham's kid or cousin or whatever it is. I can't remember. Nephew? Anyone else remember where lots are cast in the Bible?
They're cast while Jesus is on the cross for his clothes.
True. Very true. Very true. Let's go Old Testament. Let's go Old Testament. And they're not super related, but we'll just, I'm totally just curious, actually. Okay. Remember Jonah when they're on the boat and the storm hits and they're trying to figure out who is cursed us and they draw straws? Lots can mean a lot of things. It's either like sticks, like drawing the short straw, that could be casting lots. Also, rolling dice is a lot, but it wasn't just gambling. Ty, can you turn to Proverbs 16? It's not just gambling. It's literally trying to determine the will of the divine, okay? In Israel, priests were to carry lots with them. We have no record of lots being done in the New Testament after Jesus's resurrection, which is part of why we don't use them today. But it was actually a way that people tried to get in touch with the divine. And what's going on here is that, Ty, we're looking at Proverbs 16:33. What we're looking at here is what happened was probably he had two sorts of die, and one die had all the days of the month, and the other die had all the months. So you roll them at the same time, and whatever month and date it lands on, that's what the divine is telling you is the best day to do this. Does that make sense? He's rolling the dice to find the best day to massacre God's people. But Ty, can you read Proverbs 16:33?
The lot is cast into the lap, but its every decision is from the Lord.
So the lot is cast, but its every decision, Ty, is ultimately controlled by who?
The Lord.
So Haman is working to kill God's people, but according to Proverbs 16, God himself is over that selection process. Does that make sense? So ironically, Haman is trying to figure out the best day to kill God's people, but ultimately, God's in control of that. So there's no way Haman's going to get out from under God's control. Which one of the things this shows us is, look at how the Lord is at work, even in these pagan rituals that don't bring him glory at all. And look at how God is in control and at work in every single chance encounter we have. Every red light, every flat tire, every person we meet, the Lord is orchestrating all of it together. And again, what's the special thing about the book of Esther when it comes to God? Go ahead, Alexa.
His name isn't mentioned in the book at all.
Never. And there's no prayer mentioned. Nothing. It's never mentioned. And that's the point of the book of Esther, to show that God is at work in every single piece of society, even when his name is not mentioned, right? He is the main character of the story. All right. So it falls. It's in the first month, and it falls to the 12th month. So they're given a year to figure this out. Anna, can you read verse 8?
Then Haman said to King, oh goodness.
You just go King A. That's fine. We're calling it
King A. Oh, is that who you were talking about? Okay. Nice. Then Haman said to King A, there is a certain people scattered abroad and dispersed among the peoples in all the provinces of the kingdom. Their laws are different from those of every other people, and they do not keep the king's laws that it is not to the king's profit to tolerate them.
Oh my gosh, so wordy. All right, so here's what's going on. Here's why this is important. Remember, ultimately, think back to the Amalekites, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Ultimately, Haman is not a descendant of King Agag. Ultimately, he's a descendant of who? Ultimately. Go ahead, Ty.
The serpent.
Yes. He is a descendant. Now, do you guys understand what I mean that? Spiritually, right? And think about what Satan does in the Garden of Eden. He's so crafty. He uses his words to distort Adam and Eve and their vision of what God had commanded. He doesn't say, there's Jews, kill them. All I can think of is that TikTok where he's like, it's a cow farm, it's a Jew farm. All right, anyway, so it's totally okay. My wife watches TikTok. I don't understand it. I lost everyone there. Let's get it back. So instead of saying, here are these Jewish people, let's kill them all for no reason, he has to work his way in, right? So he says, there is a certain people. And where are they, according to verse 8? Anna, did you catch this? Where is this certain people?
I've already forgotten.
You're kind of already giving me the dispersed. Right answer. Okay, dispersed. Yeah, yeah. So they're not in a single location. So you can't just go attack them. They're kind of lurking. Does that make sense? They're dispersed. Where are they dispersed, Anna? Where are they dispersed?
Among the peoples in all the provinces of the kingdom.
They're everywhere. this nameless, faceless group of people that you should be concerned about is everywhere, okay? And their laws are different than other people's laws, which is absolutely true. The Jewish people had certain different laws, but then Haman adds something to it. Anna, what does he add to it? Not only are their laws different, but...
They do not keep the king's laws.
No, you're good. We'll finish that one out. Which is totally false. What did Mordecai just do like six verses before all this?
He saved the king's life.
The head Jew in the government worked to save the king's life. So saying that they have different laws is true, but saying that those laws result in those laws being against Persia, now he's going further. Does that make sense? Remember back last week, we talked about, I think it's Jeremiah 29:7, where they're commanded to seek the welfare of the country that they are in exile in. That's one of God's laws. So one of God's laws is that we should work for the betterment of the people around us. Our laws won't be against you. And so here's his plan, okay? Anna, do verse 9.
If it please the king, let it be decreed that they be destroyed, and I will pay 10,000 talents of silver into the hands of those who have charge of the king's business, that they may put it into the king's treasuries.
So, couple things here. First of all, if it please the king, look at what it says specifically. Sydney, does it specifically say if it please the king, then he should decree?
No, of course not.
Of course not. What does it say instead?
Let it be decreed.
You know what? King A, his passivity, his weakness is what Haman is playing into. Look, you don't even have to take responsibility for this. You don't have to do this. Let it be decreed. You don't have to do anything. King A's passive nature is being exploited. His weakness is being exploited against him. And then what does Mordecai promise in return, Ty? For this?
The 10,000 talents of silver?
Money. A talent is 75 pounds of silver. That's one talent. Haman promises 10,000 of those, which is 8 gajillion pounds. It's not a real number, right? Of silver, okay? And which is important because Abigail, do you remember this? Where did King A go for a little while? And then he came back. No, that's super vague. Cam, can you help her out? Do you get my vagueness?
Went to war?
Yes, he went to war with Greece. Sorry, Abigail, that was not fair. He went to war and he lost, so he's broke. Well, he's not literally broke, but he's not doing well, okay? They lost a campaign. So let's keep going. Also, I'm just going to, a quick thing here. Ty, what is Haman basically asking for? What does he want to happen?
He's asking for money so the Jews can be destroyed.
He's asking for genocide, right? Look at how when we edit the words, it makes a horrible thing seem way less horrible. Does that make sense? When we change it to, I don't know, when we change it to abortion, right? When we edit the wording, when we change the word of racism to segregation, right? People of color, they're still people. They're just, you see what I'm saying? And there are tons of examples, but look at how important words are. And look at how editing words can make an awful thing seems so much less horrible. Don't worry, they're just going to concentration camps, not death chambers, right? You see what I mean? Look at how things, and this is always what the seed of the serpent does. Satan has always used words. Ty, do you remember in Revelation, the tools that the kings are given, they're not given swords and stuff. Where does all the evil come from?
Their mouths.
It's always been like this, right? All right, let's keep going. You guys are doing great. Sydney, can you read verse 10 and 11?
Yes.
Maybe. Out loud.
I'm working on it. I'm on digital today because I left my Bible at school and I'm struggling.
I gotcha.
10 and 11?
10 and 11, yes.
So the king took his signet ring from his hand and gave it to Haman the Agagite, the son of Hamedatha?
Something that's like good. That. Yep, perfect.
The enemy of the Jews. And the king said to Haman, the money is given to you, the people also, to do with them as it seems good to you.
Okay, notice Haman has a title change here. He's not just Haman the Agagite. He is Haman the Agagite, son of Hamedatha, the enemy of the Jews. And Esther, we'll see Esther's title change as well based on her actions. He is the enemy of, again, this is an ancient hatred. Enemy of the enemy. This isn't Haman and Mordecai going at it. This is the enemy of the people of God raising his awful head again, trying to kill them. Okay? This is the enemy of the people of God coming back up again to kill them. Which is interesting because the only reason they're in Persia in exile is because they disobeyed God. So Persia is coming in as this disciplinarian, and yet here comes the people of the enemy of the people of God, and God's going to handle that. So even their exile is not God destroying them. He still loves them. He's still in control. Okay. He's given a signet ring, which is where an emblem on the ring where the king can stamp his seal of approval. So to have the signet ring of the king means you get the king's authority to approve of anything you want. Okay. All right, let's finish this out. You guys are doing great. Alexa, can you read verse 12?
Then on the 13th day of the first month, the royal secretaries were summoned. They wrote out in the script of each province and in the language of each people all Haman's orders to the king's satraps?
Satraps, yep. It just means like governors or rulers.
Oh, the governors of the various provinces and the nobles of the various peoples. These were written in the name of King Xerxes himself and sealed with his own ring.
Good, okay. Did you have anything in there about every province and people and script and language?
I don't know. Oh, I just read to you what I got.
I got you. No, that's good. Okay. Notice again, the massive Persian machine is going. It's got to go through this channel and this channel and this channel through every, and it's got to travel and through every person and nation of and province and the whole thing. The Lord is at work in this massive machine. But also notice, the whole reason this massive machine of government is turning is because of the personality and beliefs of a few groups of people. Does that make sense? Of a small group of men impacting how an entire nation turns. Separating church and state is impossible because what you believe affects how you vote. Does that make sense? What you believe about, and I just use this as an example, what you believe about what happens in the womb affects the legislation, turns the whole machine. When our founding fathers separated church and state, they just meant that you can't mandate religion on people. Religion is everywhere regardless. Even if you don't believe in God, that is a belief. Does that make sense? Look at how this massive thing turns because Haman is a seed of Satan warring against the people of God. Bad theology is the thing that turns all of society, for good or for ill. Remember, Satan is at work. It all roots back to spirituality. It all roots back to what God is doing and what Satan is doing in the world. Not that they're competing, because God is in ultimate control. And that's the other thing. God is in control of all of this. I think one of the reasons it gives us such great detail here is to remind us that God is in control of all of this. God's hand is still at work. The fact that Mordecai didn't get the reward and Haman did, that's going to come back into play later. And remind me, Cameron, Haman has just ordered the death of all the Jews. Well, what's the rank of the highest ranking Jew in the country at this moment?
The queen.
She's the queen, which is massively important for later. So look at how the Lord is. And that happened before Haman did anything. So before Haman even set this plan into motion, the Lord has already put the fail-safe in. Does that make sense? He's already got the trump card. He's already got his ammo loaded before Haman and Satan ever get anything going. Okay? All right. Let's go. Ty, can you just read 13?
Yep. Letters were sent by couriers to all the king's provinces with instruction to destroy, to kill, and to annihilate all Jews, young and old, women and children, in one day, the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month of Adar, and to plunder their goods.
Good. So this is the order, and it is to wipe out all Jewish people, all of them, which is exactly what Satan wants, because no people means no Messiah to come. No people of God means no seed of God. All right, Alexa, can you do 15?
Did we not read 14?
We just did.
I thought we read 13.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Yeah, thank you. No, good catch, good catch. Do 14 and 15. Perfect.
Okay. A copy of the text of the edict was to be issued as law in every province and made known to the people of every nationality so they would be ready for that day. The couriers went out, spurred on by the king's command, and the edict was issued in the citadel of Susa. The king and Haman sat down to drink, but the city of Susa was bewildered.
Okay, so first of all, two things we see here. Ty, how did the king and Haman decide to end this great day of governing?
They sat down for a drink.
Let's have another let's go again, baby. Load it back up. So again, this is the theme in Esther. These people are not even close to being functional for most of this book, okay? Other than, I guess, Mordecai, who's just completely blown it. Now, and Anna, what is the result? How's the city doing with this order? I think she might have froze on me.
Sorry, I was trying to find it. I was like, my memory is bad today.
No, that's okay.
They were thrown into confusion.
The city is in a
Like me.
Yes, right. I think we can all relate. The city is in a complete uproar. Now, we talked about this last week about, does anyone remember, Cam, do you remember, what is the result? What is King A's order when Esther becomes queen? What's the kind of cool thing that he decides to just do for everybody?
Oh, he ended taxes?
He just got rid of taxes. Yeah. Guess we don't need them. Guess we're good. He got a new girlfriend, and so taxes are done. And we talked about how one of the themes of Esther is when the people of God are treated well, society flourishes. I'm not arguing that no taxes means society flourishes, but as the people of God are elevated, the spirit of the world is elevated. Does that make sense? And I'm not saying that we need to make all Christians millionaires. I'm saying as godly ethics are put into practice, as godly practices are enacted on society, society flourishes. Sacrifice, the sanctity of life, the sanctity of marriage, treating each other with respect. These are Christian values because we're made in the image of God. These are Christian values. Slavery was ended mainly through Christianity, okay? Marriage being monogamous and one man and one woman is a Christian. That's what people called the first sexual revolution in the Roman Empire. Christianity leads to society flourishing. Now look, okay? Put this together for me. In 15, the people of God, so Alexa, the people of God are being ordered to be killed. And what happens to society in verse 15?
It's just going to get horrific.
It's devastation, right? When the people of God are attacked, society is thrown into chaos because the law of God is the fabric that holds society together. So when you attack that fabric, naturally you have a tearing in society. God's laws are good for society. even if people aren't Christians. Now that's, we need them to become Christians because that's why, that's when they love the law. That's what I did for love there. But when God's laws are attacked, the very fabric of society tears. And that's what's happening here. Satan's dominion is not going to be a good thing. We get a preview of Satan's kingdom here. When Satan gets his way, chaos erupts. Look at what's going on. And yeah, I mean, look at what's going on in our country today. I'm not trying to sound like, look at what's going on in our country. But God's laws are being attacked and it's not getting better. It's getting worse. It's getting much, much worse. Last thing, fun fact. Anna, can you read 12 until I tell you to stop?
Yes.
Great.
Then the king's scribes were summoned on the 13th day of the first month, and an edict according to all that Haman commanded was written to the king's...
Perfect.
Say, perfect. Oh, okay.
The date of this is huge. The 13th day of the first month, okay? This is the day before Passover, okay? And you can get that in Exodus 12, 18. So you've got Christmas Eve. This is Passover Eve, okay? Sydney, what does Passover celebrate, basically? Just like spark note it for me. What is Passover celebrating?
God saving his people from the punishment he's bringing down.
Yeah, God saving his people specifically from Egypt, but God delivering his people. And so on the day before they're supposed to celebrate this deliverance, they receive this order that they're all going to be wiped out. But there's kind of a beautiful irony to it because it's this idea of what a perfect, it's kind of perfect timing. You get this horrible order that you're going to be wiped out from existence. And then the next day you celebrate the reminder that God delivers us from horrible circumstances. You see what I mean? Does that make sense? It's kind of perfect timing. And the question now, though, they're in Persia. They're in exile because they were taken out of Egypt. And then they were given the law. And they were told, obey this law or I'm going to send you into exile. The question is God still going to keep his promises even when his people don't? Does that make sense? Of course he's going to protect you as long as you obey his law. But, you know, we always talk about God as a God of grace. God's a God of forgiveness and mercy. Yeah, but how do you know that? How do you know that? Don't let that just be something you say. The story of Esther is a biblical example that you can cite because God's people have already disobeyed him. They broke the covenant and now they're being punished for it. Is God going to honor his promise to protect them? Now, here's the other one. In Exodus chapter 17, that's where Israel fights the Amalekites. And God pledges to wipe the Amalekites off the face of the earth. Alexa, according to the book of Esther, has he done that yet?
Apparently not.
No, that's right, because Haman is still here. The Amalekites are still fighting, okay? Is God going to keep that promise? Is God going to keep his promise to wipe out the Amalekites when they're in there? Now they're not attacking them through military. They're doing it through the government. Is God, that's the overall theme of Esther right now. Is God going to keep his promise even when his people don't? Esther has essentially slept her way to the top. Mordecai's pride has gotten in the way of everything and is now putting his people at risk. The only reason the people are in Persia in the first place is because they didn't obey. These people are totally sinful. Will God still keep his promise to love them and protect them? And in our own lives, you know, John MacArthur has a great quote. He says, if you could lose your salvation, you would. And I think that's so true. Because if salvation depends on us, give me like 11 minutes and I'm going to ruin this. Right? but God still keeps his promises to me. He's still merciful to me because of the covenant he made with me through Jesus Christ on the cross. And in the Old Testament, the covenant he made with Israel on Mount Sinai, that I'm going to protect you, I'm going to love you, I'm going to keep you safe. Will he still keep this promise? And that's what we're going to find out next time on Esther, right? I'd watch that show every week. Questions? Does that make sense? We got done a minute early. Look at us. So that's the overall theme, all right? We're going to go through Esther chapter 4, I think, next week. No, we're not. Next week is the chicken and waffles, free t-shirt, free sweatshirt. If you're in town, swing by. It's going to be so fun. It's going to be great. Okay. You guys are wonderful. We had a couple of people jump in late. So I'm going to go through the Haman Agag thing one more time. Okay. Esther chapter 3, verse 1. All right. Esther chapter 3, verse 1. Haman is an Agagite. Okay. King Agag is from 1 Samuel chapter 15, okay? And King Agag was supposed to be killed, Alexa, by who? Who's supposed to kill King Agag?
King Saul.
King Saul, who Mordecai is a direct descendant of, okay? So there's, that's awkward. King Agag is king of the Amalekites, okay? Which are in Exodus chapter 17. Sydney, why are the Amalekites famous in Exodus? What do they do that's not a good idea ever?
They attack Israel.
They attack Israel. Not a good start, right? They attack Israel. So they're enemies of God's people. Amalek, the Amalekites, Amalek, and this is in Genesis 36:16. One of Esau's sons is Amalek, Jacob and Esau, right? Jacob is the chosen one of God. Israel comes from Jacob. Esau gets the Amalekites. And then you go back to Genesis chapter 3, the seed of the woman, where Jesus will come from, who Jesus is, right? Mary, literally Mary's seed, the seed of the woman is Jesus versus the seed of the serpent. The seed of Satan, who, and this is this ongoing ancient war all throughout the Old Testament, right? Egypt, Persia, Babylon, Assyria, on and on it goes. King Saul, Absalom, on and on it goes. And now it comes to Esther. And remember, Esther is right at the end of the Old Testament. Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther all take place at roughly the same time, and they're at the end of the Old Testament. So the Old Testament begins with God delivering them from the seed of the serpent. How will the Old Testament end? Okay, you guys are great. You guys are wonderful. Is that all good? All on the same page? I'll post this to the podcast, Esther chapter 4 next week. I'm going to go get some food before I pass out. I love you guys. Ty, can you pray us out and we'll be done?
Sure. Lord, we thank you so much for this time. We thank you for your word and the blessing that we received. I ask that you just allow us to dwell on these passages, just learn more and dig into it in our own time, and just get closer to you every day, and just be with us as we go throughout the upcoming weekend, Lord. In your precious name, amen.
Amen. All right. Love you guys. Talk to you guys hopefully Sunday, and maybe see you Thursday. All right. Bye, guys.